This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trust. We've lost it. How do we get it back? Or how do we convince your neighbor he shouldn't have it? We'll talk about that tonight. We have Harmeet Dhillon on, Julie Kelly. We got a great show coming up on I'm Right. We've talked about something similar to this before. Let's talk about what do we need? What do we need as a country right now? What's the big battle we face? Because I go through the same thing you go through every day. Same thing. I went through the same thing this morning you went through. Woke up first thing, got the kiddos ready for school, to figure I'll check out what's in the news. Oh my gosh, it's all horrible. And you say to yourself, well, how do we fix it? I want to fix it. What's the problem? What is the problem? How do we fix this? And I've argued forever, and I'll always maintain this, the real problem is actually this. It's not the communists themselves. Now, they're a huge problem, don't get me wrong, they are, but they're not really the problem. The problem is the people who the communists have in their sights that don't have any idea they are currently on somebody's menu and they're going to be eaten if they don't wake up. The problem is that the problem is all the people, the millions and millions of Americans who actually agree with you on the issues, they're aligned with you, but they think they're still living in some sort of a normal country. Maybe things are a little out of whack. Maybe they're a little biased, but it's okay. I mean, everything's still normal, right? Hey, baseball's still this Friday. Woohoo! That's the problem. Shaking that person awake to make them realize everything they're told is a lie is a chore. It's a journey. Some people can't even be saved. How do you have the conversation with somebody that if your CDC, your Center for Disease Control, recommends something, that's almost undoubtedly wrong? How do you convince someone of that? How do you wake someone up to this reality we live in that everything is a lie? Do you remember Michael Avenatti? Maybe you forgot because he was there for about 15 minutes, but do you remember how the American media covered Michael Avenatti? In case you've forgotten, here it is.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
John Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say. I am just dying to hear what you think.
These people all like you.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter.
Michael Avenatti just got sentenced to 14 years in prison for stealing millions of dollars from his clients. Back to the trust thing. How do you convince, I know you're already there, so right, it's just you and me talking here, but how do you convince your neighbor that whoever is being promoted on the news not only isn't as good as the news says he is, he's actually probably a horrific villain, and the more they promote him, the worse he is. How do you wake enough Americans up to that reality? But maybe I'm wrong. And this is what I mean by maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Americans really are waking up, and they're waking up slowly, slower than you would like, slower than I would like, but they are waking up. newest media trust numbers come out, all-time low. 61% of Americans have no trust in the big traditional media sources, CBS, Washington Post, New York Times, the big ones. 61%. So let's pause here for a moment. If you're in the American media and you're watching your power slip away, because the only reason you have any power as someone in the media is people's trust. I don't think I have any power, but if you consider me to have any power at all, what actually gives me that power? Is it sitting down and doing a television show for you every night? No, the power comes from a bunch of you watching and trusting what you hear here, trusting what you see, trusting that it's real. That's where the power comes from. If you watch the show and I'm just lying to you every single night for 1 hour here on the First TV, then I lose all power because you're now disregarding me as some ridiculous clown, right? The trust, the power is the trust. The trust is the power. That's the way I want to say that. The trust is the power. So if you're the media and people are getting less and less trust in you, what's the solution? Well, that's what's funny about how this horrible corruption works and how late-stage republics act and how communists act. You, if you wanted my trust, let's say you lost my trust. Maybe I loaned you $100 and you went and spent it at Red Lobster instead of going to buy food for sick kids like you said you were going to. Okay, now I don't trust you anymore. You would understand that you need to get my trust back and that you would have to earn that trust back. Hey, Jesse, let me do something for you. Let me extend a hand. Let me pay you back with interest for that because I want to earn your trust. That's what you would do because you're a logical thinker. That's how you think about things. But late-stage republics do not act that way. This is amazing, but it is true. As the American media watches its power evaporate, as the trust evaporates, there's not a single person, not a single executive, producer, host, there's not a single person in the media out there right now who's having a heart-to-heart meeting, all hands on deck, staff meeting. Not a single one's having a meeting right now and saying to themselves, hey, guys, we got to earn some trust back. Look, we have violated people's trust, and we got to earn it back. None of them. It wouldn't even cross their minds. It's not how late-stage republics work. Instead, they're simply going to try to insulate themselves from losing what they have as trust goes away. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's no better way to do that than the government. If you were a piece of trash communist in the legacy media and you're watching your trust and power evaporate, you could try to earn it back, or you could just go lobby to add, what is it called again? The Journalism Competition and Preservation Act, the JCPA is what they shorten it up. You could just lobby to have that rolled into the Defense Authorization Bill. They are going to roll in a massive media handout, and they're going to roll it into a bill that's all about national defense. And reportedly, according to Breitbart, as you just saw, they are going to do it with the approval of one Mitch McConnell. You see, this is the problem. This is the big deal of big deals. And you saw, look, recently, the media got a big old black eye. Yet another black eye for the media. What was that black eye? It was Elon Musk and journalist Matt Taibbi. It was them joining forces to kind of open the books, if you will, and show what took place in social media when it came to Hunter Biden's laptop story. Everyone censored it. Everyone ignored it. They called it Russian disinformation. And they opened the books and showed, wow, this is really, really broken. So you just got exposed once again, if you're the media. You just got exposed. You look really, really bad. How do you handle that? How do you earn that trust? Well, here's how they tried to handle it.
These so-called Twitter files were released late Friday afternoon. A Twitter employee indicated that the site had handled certain posts at the request of someone from the Biden campaign.
This weird story of a laptop left in some like repair shop, it looked like a hack and leak.
The Hunter Biden laptop story to me is a story about addiction.
I don't think the Twitter files are exactly the Pentagon Papers.
There was no smoking gun evidence of a partisan conspiracy to censor.
Biden campaign wasn't the government.
It was a really helpful thing, actually, the Twitter files today, because we got to see how content moderation works.
The Rolling Stone, which calls it a snooze fest.
People were trying to do the right thing inside Twitter.
Musk's Twitter files produced no smoking gun.
The entire ethos of Republicans is victimism.
They'll be too busy with Hunter Biden's laptop.
Just focusing on Hunter Biden instead of real-world economic issues.
Does it seem like they're interested in earning that trust back at all? Of course they're not. Look, the Biden administration themselves, they're not concerned with it in the least. They asked Corinne Diversity Hire about it. She did the old Biden, it's old news.
We see this as an interesting or a coincidence, if I may, that that he would so haphazardly, Twitter would so haphazardly push this distraction. That is a full of old news, if you think about it. At the same time, Twitter is facing very real and very serious questions about the rising volume of anger, hate, and anti-Semitism on their platform.
Don't you love how she gives press conferences? But you love it that she has to read it all. Well, I mean, guys, what you're looking at here, Twitter, don't hire diversity hires, people. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a lot more still to come. We're going to ask Harmeet Dhillon, why is she running for RNC? What's she want out of that? We're going to get the latest update from Julie Kelly on the malfeasance in the government. We have a great light in the mood. We have a great show for you. But first, I have a great gift for you. It is Christmas season. And there are three things that you never shortchange yourself on in life. One is your bedding. Spend a third of your life in bed. Two is your tires, because your life and the lives of people around you depend on having quality tires. Spend the money, get quality tires. And number three, anything you put on your feet. Those are your life. Your feet are your life. Did you know the Russian Spetsnaz, the Russian Special Forces, if you parachute in and break an arm, you're fine, they'll work with you through the mission, but the doctrine is if you break a leg or a foot, they'll just shoot you and bury you there. Your feet are everything. Grip 6, they have socks you have got to try. Go get yourself a couple stocking stuffers, a couple pairs of Grip 6 socks for the people in your life. Go get the man in your life, or woman if this is your thing, the greatest wallet ever, the lock-in wallets where your cards are locked in until you squeeze and then they pop out. Grip6.com, promo code Jesse saves you a ton of money. Grip6.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
The system and system disruptors. We've talked about this many, many, many times. We're going to update everyone again on what I'm talking about, because it's important people understand there are huge things going on right now. Things that are so much bigger than a midterm, or even the 2024 presidential race, or Joe Biden, or Donald Trump, or Ron DeSantis. Or things are so much bigger than one race, one man, one thing. What we are right now, we are a late stage republic. We hit our peak. Don't feel bad. This is how nations go. We've lasted longer than most. We hit our peak, and now we're coming apart. We're breaking apart. And what happens in a late-stage republic, one of the reasons you become a late-stage republic, is cultural institutions hold up any nation. Any nation. You have these pillars that hold the country up. Education. Politics. Entertainment. Government. The pillars hold up a nation. All of our pillars are now rotted. The leadership of all of our pillars is rotted. They all believe the exact same thing. So what you have now is you have a system, a very, very corrupt system, where the pillars, instead of keeping each other in check, protect each other at all times. All the rotted pillars, they all guard each other at all times, and they're always against you. Now, that's a very, very dangerous place to be as a nation. It's happened many, many times throughout history in other countries. And I call it the system. The system. It's all about the system. And when you get a corrupt system like this, you're going to inevitably, in a nation, have a whole bunch of people just like you. Who are you? You're somebody who doesn't want to live in a late-stage republic. You don't want to live underneath a corrupt system. You want the government, the politics, you want media, education, entertainment. You want these things cleaned out. You want somebody to come fix all this so you can go back to having the kind of country you want. I know, I say the same thing. That's what I want. So when millions of people want something, inevitably, people will rise to challenge the system. I call them system disruptors. Donald Trump was a system disruptor, one of the very first system disruptors we've had in this country since we've become a late-stage republic. Elon Musk very clearly is going to be a system disruptor of some sort. I don't wave anybody's pom-poms, nobody's. Not Trump's, no Republican politician, no billionaire, no celebrity. It's just not who I am. I don't put on your t-shirt. It's just not going to happen. But I recognize system disruptors when they come along. Elon Musk is very clearly one of these people. Now, Elon Musk is not your savior. Trump's not your savior, all right? Ron DeSantis, not your savior. But you can cheer on a system disruptor as long as he's challenging the system. But you also should understand that system disruptors get crushed most of the time by the system they're challenging. Donald Trump's going to be indicted. You know that, right? He is. There's a good chance you're going to see Donald Trump arrested on television. I'm sorry. Elon Musk, powerful businessman, richest man in the world, you don't think he's going to outrun the system either, do you? Elon Musk has this company. He's one of these, he's just a different guy, very intelligent, obviously. He has this company called Neuralink. Now, they're all about putting chips in your brain, and you can count me out on that. But, you know, when you read the press on it, this talking about helping paralyzed people walk again and things like that. Look, you're never putting a chip in my brain or anyone in my family, but I get what he's doing. It doesn't matter. That's for the purpose of our story today, that's not what the coverage is. The purpose of our story today is this. The government. Just miraculously, right after Elon Musk buys Twitter and starts opening up the books on Twitter, showing some really, really ugly connections between the government and Twitter, because they're both part of the system, all of a sudden the government has done what? They've opened up an investigation, a federal probe into Neuralink for potential animal welfare violations. And then speaking of the system, you want to know a great example of the system? Why I call it the system? Well, here's a couple for you. James Baker, he was at the FBI, knee-deep involved in that bogus FISA warrant they used to spy on then-candidate Donald Trump. You know where James Baker went after he left the FBI? He went to Twitter. Deputy General Counsel, I believe. I believe he's still there. Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci pushed horrific COVID lockdowns, vaccines, masks, the worst of the worst. You know all this. None of this stuff is news to you. And what was wild is during all that COVID madness, if you were to put something up that really anyone would acknowledge is true, like, hey, that paper mask with holes in the side, it's not doing anything. Beep, and you hit send on Twitter, you might just find your whole account suspended or taken away. Weird, because Dr. Fauci's daughter works for Twitter. That's how the system works. That's what we're up against right now in this country. Oh, and I should mention, they still have all their sights set very firmly on you. You see, you, the freedom-loving American, you as a whole, you're a system disruptor too. Got a new bulletin from the DHS. Quote, in the coming months, threat actors could exploit several upcoming events to justify or commit acts of violence, including certifications related to the midterm elections, the holiday season, and associated large gatherings, the marking of 2 years since the breach of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, and potential socio-political developments connected to ideological beliefs or personal hostility. Oh, yeah. They have their sights set squarely on you. All right, we're not done. We still have more, plenty more to go. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Let's get to, where do you shop? It's holiday season, right? We're all out there buying stuff for somebody right now. Well, we don't want to fund communism. You don't, I don't. I'm done funding corporate communism. Okay, well, what do I do then? Because, Jesse, it's everyone. No, it's not. There are tons of businesses out there that share your values, tons of them. And it's important that that's where you spend your money and that you don't spend your money with businesses who hate you, especially this holiday season. Make it a great holiday season for the businesses that share your values. Oh, you want the list? Congratulations. It's right there on your phone once you download the Public SQ app. Public SQ. Doesn't matter what you have, Apple, Android, whatever you have, Public SQ, an ever-growing database of businesses that share your values. Put your money where your morals are. Download Public SQ today. We'll be back.
I elevated racially motivated violent extremism to a national threat priority all the way back in June, I think it was, or the summer of 2019. And we have surged resources to address that. And the pace of investigations and arrests over my first 3.5 years as director, doubled, or in the case of arrests, even tripled in this space. So we have been working hard on it, but we do need more resources in this space. And our fiscal 22 budget specifically asks for more resources to help address the domestic terrorism threat.
The FBI, after attacking the enemies of the Democratic Party for 3 years, they need more money to continue to throw you in jail for that Facebook post of yours. Joining me now, my friend Julie Kelly, author of the great book January 6th. I read all of her stuff, so should you. Julie, does Christopher Wray need more money?
Christopher Wray needs a lot less money. He also probably needs some deep interrogation by Republican investigators for his bogus narratives about domestic violent extremists. Jesse, he's asking next year as a raise on top of the FBI's $10 billion budget to do exactly what you just said, continue to go after political dissenters of the Democratic Party and Trump supporters. So we know, and I know we'll talk about this, the Newsweek article that says, despite all of Christopher Wray's now for 4 years insisting that domestic violent extremism, i.e. Trump supporters, pose a top threat to the country, no statistics exist to back that up.
Okay, Julie, well, that's... I'm sure they're cooking books in some way, but that's what blows me away. This is not a problem that really exists in any significant form, yet they are convinced that it does exist, and they act like it's not only exists, it's getting bigger and bigger, and this is the war of our time. So how are they presenting data to Congress that shows they need a raise?
So this is what they're doing, and thanks to some very courageous FBI whistleblowers, we have confirmation that this is what's happening. Christopher Wray, for almost 2 years, has bragged about how FBI agents working out of all 56 field offices are involved in the criminal investigation prosecution of January 6 protesters. So what this whistleblower said is they are categorizing any January 6 case, any charge, whether it's the parading low-level petty offense misdemeanor, which is the biggest charge related to January 6, not insurrection, parading, that is labeled as an act of domestic terror. So he can take all of this together, say, well, it wasn't just a problem in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. This is a problem across the country. That's how they're cooking the books. What we know now from this Newsweek article is despite all of this hyperbole and even cooking the books, they can still only come up with about 2,700 cases in a country of 330 million people, 2,700 cases of domestic terrorism, more than a third, this official told Newsweek, I suspect it's a lot higher percentage, more than a third tied to January 6th.
Oh, gosh. Okay, no, I'm scared to even ask this question. Surely the new Republican House is not going to increase the FBI's budget, Julie.
Right, yes. I'm sure they've got their big red pen ready to scratch that out. For sure. Yes.
All right,
well,
Julie,
we know Senate Republicans for sure are going to be all over that, right, Jesse?
Yeah, I'm sure we can. Yeah, we can always count on them. All right, Julie, you have an update from today about that ridiculous Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping and assassination plot. What's the latest and greatest?
So after being getting a hung jury in April, after two other men were acquitted amid the defense of FBI entrapment, they retried two men. They were convicted in August for conspiring to kidnap and kill Gretchen Whitmer. Of course, this was an FBI plot from start to finish. But thanks to the judge, who was very heavy-handed in the retrial versus the first trial, and an accusation of juror misconduct, the jury convicted these two men. DOJ filed their sentencing motion yesterday asking for life in prison, Jesse, for the kidnapper who and domestic terrorist who lived in the basement of a vacuum repair shop in a strip mall in Grand Rapids and didn't even have running water, but he is a terrorist who was going to start a second revolution. That's what prosecutors said in their sentencing memo.
Julie, it seems like such a foreign country, like a banana republic thing to do. None of this seems legal. How does it happen? How does this guy go to having a life sentence recommended for him? This guy, clearly not well. It's an FBI plot. How did it get this far?
Well, it got this far. The real villains here, Jesse, are federal judges. And the real villains in January 6th are the federal judges who are acting as rubber stamp for the government. And the judge in this case, I listened to the first trial, even though he prevented the jurors from seeing over 200 some odd communications between FBI supervising agents and their informants that would even show how deeply involved the FBI was in putting this plot together. Even though he prevented jurors from seeing that evidence, from hearing testimony of key FBI informants, they still acquitted two men and had a hung jury on the other two. So in the second trial, this federal judge really saw the stakes for the government. He went out of his way. He was a totally different man in the retrial than he was during the first trial. And he did whatever he could, including limiting defense attorneys from cross-examining one of the government witnesses who had pleaded guilty, limiting that cross-examination to 50 minutes. So this is just one example of how the judiciary helps the government, especially in these domestic terror cases. What's really outrageous, and I put this on Twitter, Julie_Kelly2, is what the prosecutor said, comparing what happened in this Whitmer Fed napping to the Oklahoma City bombing, to the Boston Marathon bombing, which killed an 8-year-old boy. These prosecutors have no soul, they have no conscience, they have no integrity, they don't care whose lives they destroy, as long as they can help Merrick Garland and Joe Biden and Christopher Wray dig up some little gem of evidence to support their false claims about domestic terrorism in America.
Good grief. All right, you know what? We're going to switch gears because this might not even be the worst thing the FBI has done in the past couple years, and that's really saying something. Here's a little flashback to Trump on 60 Minutes.
I think it's one of the biggest scandals I've ever seen, and you don't cover it. You want to talk about...
Well, because it can't be verified.
You want to talk about insignificant things.
I'm telling you.
Of course it can be verified. Excuse me. They found the laptop. Leslie.
Can't be verified.
What can't be verified?
The laptop.
Why do you say that?
Because
even the family hasn't... The family on the laptop, he's gone into hiding. For 5 days, he's gone into hiding.
He's preparing for your debate.
Oh, it's taken him 5 days to prepare? I doubt it. Okay,
All right.
Julie, we now know guys like Elvis Chan and James Baker at the FBI preempted the release of that story by meeting with people at Facebook and probably Twitter, if you believe some people. Julie, this has gotten to the point where FBI agents have to start going to prison.
They really do. I mean, as you know, it's way past time for anyone to go to prison. And so Elvis Chan and the FBI working in cahoots with big tech at the behest of people like Nancy Pelosi, who represents most of Silicon Valley, set the stage for this. They knew there would be more coverage of Hunter Biden. They knew that the Senate report was coming out in September of 2020, which they also suggested was Russian disinformation. So look, these guys know what they are doing. They've gotten away with it now for 6-7 plus years. And then it brought us to October of 2020. With the FBI going to big tech companies like Twitter and Facebook and ordering them to censor and suppress the Hunter Biden laptop coverage in the New York Post.
All right, Julie, let's get to Paul Pelosi, because it seems like it was only yesterday some deranged MAGA guy low crawled his way under the security cameras, which the Capitol Police just weren't monitoring that day. It was so weird. And then broke in looking to kidnap Nancy Pelosi. And then Paul approaches the cops when they come to the door, opens the door for them, and instead of running out of the house saying, "Save me," he turns and walks back in the house to stand by that horrible MAGA kidnapper. What's the latest and greatest on Paul?
So you'll notice after the election, Jesse, when they exploited this, and Joe Biden actually even came out and blamed this on Trump supporters and MAGA fascists, the story has completely disappeared. Well, once in a while, I check the docket to see what's happening in the criminal case against David DePape, the alleged assaulter, who is charged with trying to kidnap Nancy Pelosi, even though she wasn't there. And now there has been a stipulated order, which means both parties agree to keep basically everything, every piece of evidence under a protective order. That means that the public cannot see any of the evidence. We know that they've withheld all the body cam footage. That's been under a protective order since day one. The stories have changed between federal agents and the local DA. But anyway, the stories disappeared. Paul Pelosi luckily looked in good health when he was at the Kennedy Center's honors. He had a hat, a fedora on, and a glove. Maybe that's because Michael Jackson, it's the 40th anniversary of Thriller. I'm not really sure what that was about. But of course, he's getting no questions. Nancy Pelosi getting no more questions about this. It was used for political purposes, exploited, and we probably will never get the real facts about what happened.
Uh-huh. Sure, that's all just a coincidence. Wishing the very best, honestly, to Nancy and Paul Monkeypox. Julie, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jesse. Back at you.
All right. Who's going to lead the Republican Party, the RNC? It actually does matter. We all love to complain about it, but there are a bunch of people running right now, a bunch of great people running, a bunch of friends of mine. We have one of them coming up next. Let's hear Harmeet Dillon's vision of that. Now, let's talk about you for a moment, because here in Texas, this is how it works. You think of spring as being allergy season, and we have allergies here in spring, but it's actually winter where you get the worst allergies here. There's some kind of cedar in the air that just tears everyone to bits down here. Used to just shred me up when we first moved to Texas. Not anymore. Now, if I have to go outside for several days in a row, it'll get me. But when I spend my normal day either here in the studio putting on a show for you or at home, my allergies are fine. I don't take any medication. I have 3 Eden Pure Thunderstorms here in the studio. I have 3 Eden Pure Thunderstorms at my home. I keep one where I sleep, one where my sons sleep, one in the general living area. It's just a little black box. You don't ever have to replace a filter. Doesn't hardly make any noise. You hardly know it's there. You will feel the difference. Christmas is here too, by the way. Almost here, I should say. Don't panic. But go to EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. That gets you a 3-pack for $200 off. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back. The direction of the Republican Party. Everyone complains about it all the time, right? This sucks, that sucks, this sucks, I don't like this. Okay, who's going to fix it? How are we going to fix it? Believe it or not, who runs the RNC is a very big deal. And so when I find out one of my friends is getting into the race to lead the RNC, actually a few of my friends are, but one of my friends is Harmeet Dillon, and she has been out there notching wins on her belt for us and has a vision for where she wants the Republican Party to go. So I figured we should ask her about that before we get to Arizona and everything else. Joining me now of the Dillon Law Firm and Liberty Center, now running to be the big cheese at the RNC, Harmeet Dillon. Harmeet, what do you want to do with the Republican Party?
Well, the first thing I want to do is win elections, Jesse, and I think that all Republicans feel the same way.
that's really the job number one of the RNC. It isn't, you know, sort of minority outreach or what have you. All of that is means to an end to win elections. And what I've seen in the 6 years that I've been a member of the RNC, and frankly, many years before that as a leader in my state party, is that I think the leadership of the party is increasingly out of base of what the evolving base of the party wants. And in turn, you know, that leads to sort of frustration by the base. They think the RNC isn't listening to them. They get turned off. Sometimes they don't vote. They go for, you know, fringe independent candidates or libertarian or what have you. And I'd like to turn that around. I'd like to see all of us rowing in the same direction. And the constituencies are donors, large and small, the sort of the party activists, the voters, our candidates. We all need to be in sync. You look across the aisle to the Democrats, they're in sync. They have, you know, these Marxist ideals. Their billionaire donors support the Marxist ideals. Their, you know, candidates and the people who win in Congress support those ideals. And their voters apparently are happy with those ideals. But we're all over the place in different directions in the party. I'm not sure I'm the person who can have all the answers, but I do know that I have the energy and the vision to, I think, do a better job. And I think that our party deserves that and it needs it. And I'm also humble enough to know what I don't know. And I'm happy to say that a lot of my good friends and your friends too, Jesse, have offered to step up and help me if I'm able to pull this off. I'd love to get people like Scott Pressler involved in voter registration and even ballot harvesting and early voting where it's legal. I'd love to get better communications, better fundraising, more efficient use of our dollars. And there's a lot of talent in this country. Most of it's outside DC. So I'd love to decentralize the RNC as well and make sure that we go out into America and listen more to what the voters think. So that's kind of the high level picture.
Love that. Love that Scott Pressler stuff. All right, let's talk about something that's not sexy. Kind of makes people turn their nose up. But you mentioned it, and it's true. Our rich people, our billionaires, we have millionaires and billionaires on our side. They are, I certainly don't want to say cheap by any stretch of the imagination, but notoriously difficult to wrangle together and difficult to get them to contribute to causes that aren't sexy. It's not hard to get a right-wing billionaire to write a check to someone running for president. Very difficult to have one write a check for, let's say, a ballot harvesting operation. Democrat billionaires do that all the time. Ours do not. As RNC chair, kind of your job, or at least your job, to kind of help bring them together and butt some heads together and get them done. How do we get them done?
So this is a complex answer to your question. So if you view the whole game as just the RNC, and then you're comparing that to the DNC, that is an incorrect comparison. But really, RNC is all we got going on right now. That needs to change. The DNC is, you know, raises less money than the RNC, but then they're just, you know, one of 50 different outfits that raise money on the left. And on our side, there are a lot of consultants getting rich off what we raise at the RNC. It's a very fat consultant base. A lot of money, people make money in direct mail. So a lot of the money we raise doesn't even go to money that we can spend. What we need to build with the RNC as leadership is outside organizations, nonprofit organizations, PACs, outside C4s and C3s and others that can do some of this work legally and match the Democrats dollar for dollar. I think they're probably 10 to 1 against us the way that they raise their money. You just saw that Katie Hobbs in Arizona, who we're going to talk about, you know, she got like some $23 million cash infusion on her behalf from that corrupt FTX deal. And so I don't want to write off the donors. Some of the donors are turned off by excessive spending and bad choices at the RNC. I feel like a change of face and policy can bring some of them back. I've spoken to some of these donors. Some of them have gone their own way and started some of these outside organizations, which is great. I know some more of them are going to be doing that in the future. We should be talking to the extent that that's legal. We should be dividing up the tasks like the left does. And we should be making sure that we work together as a family to elect our people. Now, you may have differences of opinion about a particular candidate or the other, but once the candidate is selected, we have to be all in for them. That is how the left operates. That's how we have to operate.
Harmeet, let's go to Arizona, because I know you were actually on the ground in Arizona. A lot of people talk about it. You were actually there. I know Carrie Lake herself has shown her public appreciation for what you did there. Tell people who are confused right now what happened, what's happening in Arizona, what was bad, what was good, what happened?
Let's step back to the 2020 election. Arizona, particularly Maricopa County, where the bulk of the population is there, made a lot of mistakes with respect to, you know, pens and ballots and machines and all of that. I'm not saying, like some people have, that, oh, these machines are being programmed to switch votes from one side to the other. I think that that would be a conspiracy that would be hard to keep under wraps. But voter confidence is impacted when they see that they're putting their ballots into a machine that can't read them because some poorly trained election worker did not set the printer settings correctly on the printer. Or worse, which is what happened in 2022, they did not test those machines with ballots printed on site. Now, I don't know how it is where the viewers live, but in Arizona, they got a what's called a vote center system now in Maricopa County. So you can actually go anywhere in the county, no matter where you live, and get a ballot printed that lists your local stuff. Now, that requires that the printers work correctly. If they don't work correctly, if the reader can't read what the printer says, then you have chaos. You have long lines. You have overflowing boxes of ballots. You have mistakes like happened in Maricopa County, where it appears in a couple of locations. They mixed up ballots that had been counted and not counted, and they had to go do it again, segregate it, cover it up. All of those things happened there. The problem is that if you haven't laid the groundwork before an election to litigate, to make sure that these people are under a consent decree or a court order so that they have to do certain things the right way, then there's little that you can do. Almost no court in the country is going to step in and allow a do-over after election day. That's extremely rare. So I documented all of that that happened there. I had six attorneys at my firm working after the fact to take declarations and contact 100 witnesses and do our best to make sure that we made a track record. I think what's going to happen, you know, Carrie has a lot of other lawyers on the ground. I'm, you know, giving them information, and she's working directly with them and also, you know, continuing to get advice from me. There is litigation ongoing with Abe Hamadeh for attorney general. He's within 500 or so votes, and so there needs to be a recount effort over there supervised by lawyers. And I think what we need to do is take all of this information and make sure that we clean up Maricopa County. There's a couple other problem counties as well, but you cannot wait until election day and start complaining about it then. You really have to lay the groundwork in advance. So when I hear, for example, that the RNC is sort of going to like step back from election integrity for now because of funding or what have you, I heard that from a DC insider, a top election lawyer. That really concerns me because there is no off day for the Democrats. Mark Elias doesn't take off for Christmas and, you know, a month and party. He's filing lawsuits around the clock. We have to be doing the same. We are nowhere near near matching them on that. And so that would be a top priority for me if I were elected chair of the RNC. Donor confidence, which is necessary for the money needed to hire the good lawyers who will fight around the clock.
Harmeet, appreciate you. Thanks for getting in the fight.
I appreciate you. Thank you, Jesse.
All right. We don't have a light in the mood next. We have something much, much more important. Hang on. All right. Instead of lighting the mood, we're going to focus on something serious and something important. We're going to focus on me. And more specifically, we're going to focus on my hair. I know you enjoy I'm Right. And Lord willing, as long as they don't fire me, I'll be bringing you this show for a long time. But I've got to be honest. The show is going to look different in the future than it looks now. Because my hair is, it's not hanging on. It's not hanging on at all. It's receding. You can see it's receding. It's thinning. It's practically not even there. Have you ever had a sunburn on your scalp? I have, because I don't have enough hair to block out the sun anymore. The hair's going away. And so as I've discussed, it's going to start getting shorter and shorter and shorter as I buzz it down. I announced this publicly. I can't, Father Time's undefeated. I can't do anything about the hair. I'm not getting a toupee or hair plugs. I'm not going to do the comb over. The Kellys go bald and we let nature take its course. I'm letting it go. Apparently, this didn't go over well with everybody. I got an email to the show that said this. Jesse, our son had thinning/receding hair, similar to yours. I saw him at Thanksgiving, and he had shaved it all off. I love this boy, Jesse, but he went from pleasant-looking to ugly in one fell swoop. Don't do it! Bald heads ain't pretty. For a guy as handsome as you, it could really be damaging. I'm an old lady, and I speak the truth. You know what? All I have to say is, ouch. I'll see you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.